Welcome to the New Zealand Motoring Podcast, brought to you by podcasts.nz.
Hello and welcome to the New Zealand Motoring Podcast, another in the increasingly regular podcasts we're managing to squeeze out these days.
It's a bold claim.
It is a bold claim, but we're seeming to do quite well so far. I am Damien O'Carroll.
I'm David Linklater.
And Cameron Officer isn't with us today because he's off holidaying in tropical locations.
Actually, now he's not here, I just thought it might be a good time to discuss his future with the company. Or should we do that when we stop recording?
Oh, yeah, possibly. It could be okay. A good idea. Anyway, let's just go straight into the news because we're all about that now. We're efficient. Not waffling on.
I've got a newsy thing.
You've got a newsy thing.
It's actually nothing to do with cars.
I don't care then.
It's something to do with phones.
Oh, well, I do care then.
About Apple proposing a new feature for the next iPhone, or the next operating system, really, iOS 11 it's going to be.
Yes.
They're going to have a do not disturb feature on the phone, which will activate when you're driving your car. So the phone will know that you're in your car because...
they know that sort of thing.
They actually know whatever you're doing, don't
pretty
they?
Much.
Like, whenever you park your car, your phone always says your car is parked here. Yeah. But anyway, it will especially know. It'll know anyway, but it'll be very sure because you'll either be connected via Bluetooth or CarPlay, or it will use.
I think even the type of motion it can sense now these days, can't they?
Yeah, there's something called the Wi-Fi Doppler effect that they can use to figure out whether you're in a car or not.
Ooh.
So anyway, the phone will know. And it won't just do it without you asking. You have to opt into the feature, which seems quite wise. So you won't automatically get locked out of your phone.
Yeah.
But if you do try and unlock your phone while you're in a moving car, you will get a prompt saying, hey, you're driving. Do you think we should shut this thing down for a little while? And you've got the option to just set up an automatic reply saying, I'm driving with Do Not Disturb turned on. I'll see your message when I get where I'm going.
Okay.
So, which you can sort of do with CarPlay now anyway, can't you?
Much.
And some Bluetooth systems. You can reject a call and send an automated message saying, hey, I'm driving, leave me alone. But I actually think it's quite a good idea.
I think it's quite a good idea, but then it is sort of render itself completely pointless by being optional. And that if they make it just compulsory, as soon as your car senses you're in a vehicle and stops working, then what if you're a passenger? What if you're in a bus? What if you're in a train? Of course, all those
things. I can answer that. You will have the ability to say, I'm in the passenger seat. It's okay.
Yeah. So it's
just like when you're driving an American car and you're trying to pair your phone while you're driving. It says, Are you in the passenger seat? And as long as you say yes, then you get full access to all the
functions. And that's sort of the flaw. I mean, it's not really a... If you're the sort of person that doesn't have the willpower to ignore your phone when you're driving anyway...
That's everybody.
You're not going to be turning this on. So.
I think it's a good idea for one reason, and that's because there is this pressure these days for people to answer their phone straight away.
That's
people
true.
Get annoyed. There if someone calls you or texts you and they don't get a response straight away, they get annoyed.
They get irritated.
This is a very widely recognised thing. Like, if someone gets a message back saying, I've got Do Not Disturb on...
Yeah. I'm
that's
driving.
Like almost
okay.
An acceptance that it's okay. Oh, okay, you'll get back to me when you get where you're going. So I actually think it's good.
Okay.
And it is designed for people who don't have phone projection like Apple CarPlay in the car.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of people still. I mean, we're very lucky. we drive cars with CarPlay a lot because it's becoming quite common in new cars. But, of course, the majority of people are still using their phones mounted on their windscreens or whatever on speakerphone. So, this is like a good thing, I think.
It's certainly not a negative. It doesn't hurt. And it's a good thing to have in there. So, good on them.
And, it stops you texting and what have you. And it would actually be, in an ideal world, you wouldn't actually talk on your phone at all when you're driving, even when you're hands-free.
Because
there's plenty of, this is a bit of a controversial point, but there's plenty of evidence to suggest that actually whether you're holding your phone or not is irrelevant.
Yes.
If you're focused on a phone conversation,
that's
just as dangerous as if you're holding your phone and talking on it. It's got nothing to do with what you're doing with your hands.
No.
It's being focused on something other than the driving. So I'm just going to drop that in there. But well done, Apple. We approve.
Yes. Good thing. A good thing. People probably won't use it, but a good thing.
I'll use it.
You'll use it.
Oh, no, I won't.
No, you won't. You'll have CarPlay. So, yeah, in a car that doesn't have it, though, you can use it.
Hmm. What's your newsy bit?
Well, speaking of cars that don't have CarPlay, Mini. Sorry, that's coming.
BMW is introducing CarPlay.
They are getting it, but they're taking their time. But anyway, Mini, BMW New Zealand. because I don't call it Mini New Zealand, BMW New Zealand, have recently announced the arrival and pricing of the Cooper SE Countryman.
What does the E mean?
The E means electricity.
Oh.
It's the plug-in hybrid, so it's basically the BMW 225 XE.
Yes, it is.
In a mini form, but it is coming to New Zealand, and it will be here, I did have that, in August.
That's excellent.
That is excellent.
Do you know what? The BMW 225 XE is actually a very excellent plug-in hybrid.
Yes.
Because it has got a petrol motor driving the front wheels and an electric motor driving the rear wheels, and it all works extremely well.
Yes, yes. And of course, this is the same. And it will cost $59,900.
That's quite a lot for a tiny little car, but then it is a mini.
But then it's not a tiny little car.
No, it's not. It's a big car, isn't it?
It's quite a large car. Well, not large. I mean, it's
a small SUV.
It is, I do believe, I think I've even stated this as a fact on the podcast before, it's about the same size as a Volkswagen Golf.
Yes.
So it's not tiny, but it's not huge. But yeah, I mean, I can see it being very cool.
Yeah, it's a good thing, and let's face it, minis are probably driven mostly around town in the city. I think a plug-in mini. I think that as I recall, the BMW has actually got a pretty decent sort of electric range.
I think
as
so.
Well.
Yeah, I think the
and
mini's
it's very good
too.
At regenerating its power.
Yes.
Also,
yes.
Not all plug-in hybrids are good at sort of regenerating the battery, but that particular one is. So I think that'll be a very good thing, and I think it'll be quite popular because I think trendy mini people will like the idea of a plug-in
Absolutely.
Mini.
Absolutely.
Especially if they can have it with stripes and purple interior
lighting.
I'm sure,
sir, that is extremely likely that it will come with stripes and interior lighting. And it even comes with a charging point that's got a little black logo on the outside of it in a very sort of stylized mini way that they've done.
So, yes. And a picture of a smiley face.
Yes.
Giving you the thumbs up.
It's all happy. Very happy little car. So, yes, that'll be here in August. So that's
cool.
Not that far away.
Oh, I look forward to that.
Indeed. I will be looking forward to it too. So, anyway, that's the news, really. Now that there's no, we're sitting here waiting for Cameron to talk, but he's not going to.
I know. I feel sad that we haven't got a third news item.
It's kind of.
And another person to disagree with about something.
We can make up for it next time.
Are we going to talk about the launches now?
I think we should talk about the launches now.
What launches have there been?
Well, there was the big one, the Nissan Pathfinder and X-Trail facelift.
Was that a big one?
No, but it was the fact that there was Nismo stuff there as well that was the exciting part.
So it wasn't really a Nissan Pathfinder and X-Trail launch.
They were there. That was sort of... It was a
Nissan Media Fest.
It was a Nissan Media Fest at Hampton Downs to celebrate and launch Nismo in New Zealand.
Hooray!
Now, it's never technically been officially available here before
the
Nismo
products.
No, there have
been plenty of Nismo cars, though.
Yes. But they basically launched it with a fun track day with the GTR.
Yes.
And others. Well, I say
others. I was there, actually.
You were.
As well.
As was I.
As well, in addition. And that was the first time I'd driven a GTR.
Me too.
And I've still got really no idea.
No,
what
because
the car's
you couldn't
like,
really
drive it on the track.
We were fairly restricted to what we could do in it, and it was sort of all in automatic mode, and it was ferociously fast.
And there was a man in the passenger seat yelling at you,
yes,
slow down.
Yes, but deeply impressive car. What was it, 300?
300 and something or other
$1,000.
But then it's a special car.
It's a very special car. In fact, there's only one per year, I believe, was they're doing in New Zealand, isn't it?
I don't know if it's one per year, but it's not many. It might be one for the rest of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very specialised car.
They're not doing very many of them. Fortunately, though, they are also doing a Nismo 370Z.
Which is not as special.
Which is not as special, but it's still pretty cool. It's noisy and raucous and looks very cool. So they're all...
Could I just add a Nismo fact?
Yes.
The Nismo GTR has got the same turbochargers as the Nissan GTR GT3 racing car.
Yes, it
That's
does.
My Nismo fact.
Yes, it does.
Just as an indication of the fact that it's quite a special car.
It is quite a special
not
car.
Just
it's got lots of additional carbon fibre bits. And
as you'd expect
for a lot more.
$100,000.
Yeah, that's about 100 grand more than the standard car, I think, isn't it? So.
And also the Nissan Pathfinder and X-Trail have different grills.
That's the end.
That's actually not true. The Pathfinder's got a new engine, hasn't it?
It has. And we did skids in Navarra's on the skid pad.
Oh, yeah. And I drove the Nismo RC Leaf, which is the Leaf-based It's not really leaf-based. Not really it's leaf. Only got the leaf, got battery engine. Pack and motor. Racing car. And Nissan built six of them just for promotional purposes back in 2011 when they bought the Leaf out. And it's a little carbon fiber racing car, and it was cool. It was at the Leadfoot Festival, actually. But yes. I managed to jump in the car at the right time, and someone took me across to a part of Hampton Downs that wasn't being used, and I got to drive around the track, and it was great and quite slow. But it did feel like a racing car. It was weird because it was really slow.
Yeah,
slow. Exactly the same power pack as a standard Nissan Leaf.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot lighter. It's 400 kilograms lighter because it's all carbon fiber.
But
it's a proper racing car. It's got racing slicks, and it's made of a carbon fiber tub, and it's all cool.
I mean, it made a hell of a racket going up the hill.
Oh, it's really loud. It's inside really it's quite loud noisy. Too. Yeah, don't forget anything you think about electric cars. Silent electric quiet. Cars.
Yeah, the engine's quiet, but everything else is.
So, I mean, it was great fun to drive because it did feel like a racing car, but it was also quite slow, so you didn't have to be too scared. Yeah, I almost forgot about that. I suddenly remembered we were talking about it.
I was waiting for you to talk about it, actually.
Oh, okay. You would have reminded me.
No, I wouldn't have. But anyway.
All right, what else?
Next up was the Land Rover Discovery.
I did not go to that one, although I have driven the vehicle.
To that. You went to the... You've driven it, though, where?
Oh, I went to Utah and drove it ages ago, but I don't want to go back to that.
No,
overseas.
We've done that. It's a deeply impressive vehicle, I have to say. It's perhaps departed quite... a bit too much from what the Discovery originally looked like.
Yeah, well, and cost.
Like. And cost. It's quite a bit more expensive. But, I mean, obviously, they're just kind of realigning that for the new Defender that'll slot in.
Yes.
Where the Discovery used to
be. I think we've discussed all this before. Well,
we have discussed this before. Anyway, Discovery's here now. Very nice. Very impressive. Very capable.
And they're being used to ferry people around for all the Lions games at the moment.
Yes. So you'll see them around.
Because Land Rover has sort of a global alliance with British football, so the local distributors are being forced to provide vehicles for
more or less
the visiting rugby officials. So yes,
so you know,
go Britain and India
and India, yeah. Well, yeah, and then of course, moving on to the next impressive SUV that was launched. And the last, however it was, I want to say month, but it probably wasn't that long, Skoda Kodiaq.
Oh, yes. I didn't go to that one either, but I have driven the Kodiaq since the event, and I think it's fantastic.
It is a remarkable car. I mean, it got rave reviews overseas when it was released. There's always sort of that tendency to look at it and say, yeah, whatever, we'll see what it's like when it gets here, but it is... just a deeply, deeply impressive machine.
There is kind of a motoring journalist effect in that motoring journalists love Skodas.
Yes, true.
Because they're a bit left of centre, and they're sort of that smugness that we all have. Oh, you know, you shouldn't buy a Volkswagen, you should buy a Skoda. It's good. But it really is.
It is insanely good. I mean, it starts at $39,990 for the base one, which is not a base model car by any means. It's got quite a lot of stuff in it.
It's got a tiny engine.
It's got a tiny, tiny engine, but that pulls it along at a perfectly good rate. I quite enjoy. In fact, one of the highlights from the launch was the base model front drive.
I haven't driven that one.
You haven't driven the tiny engine.
It's not, flash
I mean, it's not the most powerful thing in the world, but it's does the trick perfectly well.
It's very the one I drove is a very nice car to drive. Very comfortable. Mm. Like it's not a sort of a you know how every new car these days has to be sporty.
Yes, they haven't done that.
The Kodiaq
is great.
It's not sporty.
No,
it's comfortable and soft and good for families.
Yep, and it's still quite capable on a windy road. It doesn't sort of fall over itself like some other comfortable SUVs.
It is a big thing though, isn't
it's
it?
It's a very big
seven
thing.
Seat SUV,
and it's about the same size. Fractionally bigger in some areas, fractionally smaller in others, as a Hyundai Santa Fe.
Yes.
Which is a very big vehicle.
Yeah, so it's a full-size thing, but it's also, there's a lot of surprise and delight stuff in it, isn't there?
A lot of cool stuff,
clever little features, like it's got little door protectors that pop out when you open the door, which actually I learnt today, they're also fitted to the Bentley Bentayga, aren't they? Oh, blank looks.
There you
Daniel.
Go. I've driven You've that driven vehicle a Bentley several Bentayga. Times, in fact. And I
Someone told me that. Maybe that's incorrect.
I don't know. I'll have to.
Makes sense.
It does
Same
make sense.
Family.
It's a clever idea, but
Plus,
I believe...
Bentley people are more likely just to swing their doors open on whatever
that's
else
true.
Is next to them.
Yeah.
And yeah, just little things like a lot of it's stuff that is in other Volkswagen product, but it's sort of this car brings it all together, like grips and the bottle... and the cup holders so that you can just open your bottle with one hand.
The traditional Skoda umbrellas in the front doors.
Yeah, and the traditional Skoda interior light that's also a torch that you can take out and stick to the side of the car for changing a tyre or whatever. So all stuff like that.
And the brilliant little plastic things in the boot that Velcro to the to the carpet, so you can put them sort of either side of your bag and hold things in place in the boot, and just very clever little things like that that it does exceptionally well as being a very, very good car.
Yes, it is. And it's basically on the same platform as the Tiguan and the forthcoming SEAT Ateca.
Yes.
So it is a good thing. So it's like cheaper than it. I mean, it's not really a rival for the Tiguan because it's quite a bit bigger.
Mm.
But it's in that sort of league of engineering and capability.
But it's smack in the price range of the Tiguan too. So
yes, it is. That's a great thing.
Well, next up, we had a next up,
do you want to start that again?
It's one of the series of Audi launches that are rattling off over the next month.
Yeah,
they
they're having a bit of a renewal.
Absolutely, they're churning them out. This was quite a special one, though. It was the RS3 sedan and the TT RS,
which is really a launch for a new engine, isn't it?
Pretty much,
because they've both got a new 5-cylinder engine.
Yes. Well, they haven't done the sedan, I believe, in New Zealand before.
No, haven't had the RS3 sedan before.
The Sportback or hatch in normal English,
normal people language. Talk,
yeah. I mean, they the quick cars.
They are, but just to clarify, there is still an RS3. Sportback, but that's a superseded model because this RS3 sedan, which is the same sort of model generation in terms of body shape and everything, has got a new engine.
Yes.
So there will be a new RS3 Sportback coming with this new engine. Yes.
Have to say, the RS3 sedan, it feels like a more grown up car.
It absolutely does.
Just because it's not a hatch.
Feels like a lot of car for the money.
Oh, a hell of a lot of car.
Ordinarily, you'd say, oh, sedan, you know, blah. Yeah. But when you're talking about a high-performance car, a sedan's actually kind of cool. Yeah.
105?
Something like that.
But low 100s.
Seems like it should be more.
Seems like it should be a lot more, especially when I'd had a S4 Avant. Avant. And that's a $112,000, $13,000 car. And you'd really want to have that extra space for less performance.
Especially given this is a genuine Audi Sport RS.
Absolutely. It's got a 5-cylinder engine. And
Audi is still quite... It has a very wide range of enhanced cars. There's all sorts of different S badges and what have you, but they are quite firm about Audi Sport, which is their sort of halo brand, being just the RS cars. And RS cars are proper high performance cars with sort of bespoke engines, and you know that's the thing. An RS car is an RS car.
Yes,
and they're special.
And they are very special. Yes. And what actually impressed me, possibly I think the most, was how quite different in character the TT RS was. It's got the same engine.
It's essentially the same car.
Same platform, same engine. It's quite a more aggressive machine and noisier.
Sitting a lot lower, and there is a lot more noise in the cabin, and it's a lot more responsive, I guess, because it's a lot. I don't know if it's got a shorter wheelbase. It probably has.
It could well have. Yeah,
but it's a lot stiffer, obviously, because it's a coupe body shape, and you're sitting in a completely different sort of position in the car. Yeah, very cool machine.
But Audi like to say it's the a smaller. A baby R8, which is nonsense.
It is not.
Utter nonsense, but it's enough to make you to forget it's a TT.
Yeah, it is a cool-looking thing. It's quite aggressive.
Very aggressive. And whereas the RS3 is quite restrained.
It is actually very restrained, but, well, it has got Quattro written.
Yeah, I know, it's got Quattro.
Big letters along the front.
You can delete that if you want to, but I can guarantee nobody.
No, why would you? Why would you? No, it is a cool thing, and it does feel like a whole lot more car than an RS3 Sportback, even though it's not. It is literally
exactly
the same
thing,
car, but with a boot.
Just feels a lot more serious.
I think they have, because there's no RS4 at the moment, a new one is coming, but I think Audi New Zealand kind of feels that maybe some owners of the superseded RS4 might move into this for a while before the new RS4 comes in. It is almost as fast, isn't it?
Yes.
Or is it faster?
That's a very good question.
It's similar.
Because I know the S4 is faster than the RS4, so it could well be. Because I'm pretty certain that going into guessing here, but I'm pretty certain the RS3 is faster than the S4.
Yeah, that would be right.
Yeah, so it would be faster.
Excellent research as always by us.
Yes, in depth.
Just trust us. An RS3 sedan, performance-wise, is in the same ballpark RS4.
That's a nice cover. That'll do.
And that is something they're looking very closely at. And I can actually see that, because it does have the same, as a sedan, it's sort of got the same sort of dignity, you know.
I'd sort of look at it and hop out of it and actually think,
Looks like a bigger car than it is.
But it does look like a bigger car than it is, and it's got a real sort of, A4 feel to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, we love it. And, you know, if you must buy a TTRS, that's fine. But it's almost, it's got exactly the same engine, exactly the same power output as the RS3. It's a bit faster, obviously, because it's a bit smaller. I think they've only got, how many TTRSs do they have? I think 20 at the moment.
15, 20.
And if you buy one, you get a whole lot of goodies. Like you get a special helmet, and you get racing gloves, and you get this, and you get that. With the notion, I suppose, that you're going to take your TTRS to track days, and I suppose you might. Although I suspect it's more of a show-off.
Yeah,
coupe.
I don't think it will.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the launches.
Cool.
So what have you been driving lately?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I've been driving the BMW 530D Touring.
Ah.
Now, a BMW Touring, I hear you ask. What's the point of that?
Oh, I don't know.
In these days of SUVs. And the point is that it's really cool.
It's cooler than an SUV.
It is. BMW New Zealand has this idea that, you know, there's still a market out there for a traditional wagon, and I hope it's right because it's a lovely car. It's I drove the 530D, which is the 3-litre turbo diesel one. You can always buy it as a 540i, so that's the 3-litre twin turbo petrol.
Which is what you do, really, isn't it? That's cool.
I don't know, would you?
I like that 540 engine.
It is nice.
It is very nice.
Although a diesel kind of...
Diesel is cool.
...has an appropriateness for a wagon. Anyway, the good thing about both the wagons, compared with their sedan equivalents, is that they are both X-Drive. So BMW is doing what it did with the 3 Series. The wagons are X-Drive only, and the sedans are rear-drive only, at least in New Zealand. I mean, in Europe, you can just mix and match all of that stuff. There, yeah. But I think that... that makes sense. The 530D, it's about $4,500 more than the sedan, which I think is, you know, a fairly reasonable premium.
You get a lot more moving parts for your money.
You do. There's a lot of moving parts. It does a lot of clever things. You can also add, with the Ds, you can add an M-Sport kit. With the petrol ones, the 540s, they come with an M-Sport kit, and the M-Sport kit does actually look pretty cool, even though I don't approve of it being called an M-Sport kit, because it sullies the M badge, which we all love so much.
Doing that.
So it is a clever, clever thing. It's got some quite good sort of practicality features, actually. It's got a tailgate that's got a separate glass opening, so you know you can just open the window up and chuck stuff in the back. It's got the sort of comedy tailgate that you can kick your foot under and it'll open automatically when the glass bit's closed, obviously. You can, you know, fold the seats down from the back of the car. It's got levers for that. The back seats split 40-20-40, so, you know, you can sort of mix and match load carrying and people carrying if you want. And it is actually a fantastic thing to drive. I just love it.
It's a 5 Series after all.
Yes. I mean, you know, SUVs, modern SUVs are great to drive too. Like an X5 is pretty nice to drive. But when you get in something that's just a little bit lower and a bit sportier, you do appreciate it.
It's still like that argument of saying, you know, how refined and car-like utes are for utes.
Yeah.
SUVs are great to drive for SUVs, i.e. large, tall, heavy vehicles. So
my
it's
argument,
always going to be better.
My argument is always when anybody says, oh, you know, this SUV is just as good to drive as a passenger car. And I said, I always say it doesn't matter how good it is. It could be the best thing to drive in the whole world. It would still be better if it was lower to the ground.
Exactly.
And you just can't argue with that. So space-wise... I mean, I don't know whether you'd buy a Touring solely for the practicality. I think it looks really cool.
Looks cool.
It's a much better looking thing than the sedan. So you'd buy it just for style.
Yeah.
But if you are buying it for practicality, it's almost as big as an X5 in terms of load capacity. Okay. It's not quite. It's 570 litres compared with 650 for an X5.
But I would argue that all of that X5 extra space would simply be in height.
Yes, could well be. So
it's not...
There certainly wouldn't be any more length.
No.
Because, surprise, surprise, 5 Series fact, 5 Series Touring is longer than an X5.
Ah, right.
So the footprint's actually bigger. So, yeah, it's probably got more load length in it, although that's not a statistic I have to hand.
No.
I'm sorry, listeners. Anyway, I do think, you know, if you're sort of a little bit weary of the whole SUV thing in New Zealand, and people are getting weary of it, although they're still very popular vehicles. if you wanted something a little bit different and a little bit cool and wanted something that was just spectacular to drive, and don't forget that the 5 Series is the very latest generation model, so yes, it's got a lot of technology
that the X5
doesn't have.
Yes.
You know, including stuff like a car we had, had a whole package of optional technology, like the big display key that looks a bit like a cell phone with a capacitive touchscreen, and remote parking, and wireless Apple CarPlay, actually. The first production car in the world to have wireless Apple CarPlay, which works very, very well. And it's got a new sort of screen setup that's all touchscreeny and everything. So this is all stuff the X5 doesn't have, unless we see the new X5. And the reason why I'm telling you all of this is that I'm building up to the news that the 530D Touring is actually $7,500 more expensive than an X5. So you might think the SUV should be more expensive, but it's not.
It's not.
Not in this case.
Not at this stage.
I think it's absolutely worth it. That would certainly be my choice.
It would be.
Love the car. It sort of addresses my main concern with the 5 Series sedan, which is that the 5 Series sedan looks incredibly old-fashioned.
Yes,
it's a very advanced car.
Remarkably difficult to tell it between that and the 7 Series.
It is, yes. The Touring looks fantastic, yeah. I think. Yeah. It's just long and low and quite sleek, and I just think it's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
The end.
That is my story. Well, I'm going to go the complete opposite direction to you, your big pretentious European luxury cars. I recently drove a Mahindra XUV 500.
I'm going to surprise you and say I've driven one of those.
I know you've driven one of those, but have you driven an ex-rental one with 12,000 kilometres on it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where it came from. I suspect not.
I did, because Mahindra are very small in this country, and they sort of don't, you know, have the resources necessarily to put a fleet of press vehicles on for journalists.
Even though it is an enormous company in India.
Enormous company in India and worldwide. But anyway, this one was available, and I'd never driven one, so I was doing it for another publication. We're doing a video on it, so I took that out and spent a while on it. And the interesting thing for me, I mean, I really enjoyed it. It's the one thing that struck me was it. I spent the whole time thinking, you know, this has got a really good ride for a rugged vehicle with ladder chassis and serious off road. It doesn't actually have a ladder chassis.
No, and it does have that feel to it, doesn't it?
It feels like a Prado or something.
Yeah, quite a lot of lateral movement when you drive it. It gets a little bit sort of untidy over very sort of small bumps in the road, and you think, oh yeah, this is like a hardcore off road vehicle, wobbling around on its big tough chassis.
It's not, but then Jeep do that on purpose with the Cherokee. They did that. So.
Yeah, Cherokee, which is based on a road car platform, but they insist on making it feel like a slightly bumpy off-roader. Yeah,
but, you know, I don't know if Mahindra did that on purpose.
I don't think they probably did. Yeah.
But anyway, the thing that really struck me about this thing was it was an ex-rental, and it did have 12,000 Ks on it. And there's always that, I mean, you always sort of see comments on articles that we do where people say, oh, that's all fine and well when it's new, but what about when it's got, you know,
70Ks
on it? And this thing had hung together incredibly well. It's 12,000 Ks of, you know, rental mileage. So people who hate it and are thrashing it within an inch of its life, and it felt like a new car still. There were no rattles. No rattles whatsoever.
Are you sure?
I am sure. That was what impressed me about it. There's a few bits of trim that looked a bit worn, and one that was kept popping up around the gear lever. But it had hung together remarkably well. And I really enjoyed it. I shouldn't sound surprised.
Come on now.
I mean, when you consider it's a vehicle that's... the two-wheel drive is, what, 36,990, and the four-wheel drive is 39, I think.
Quite a big vehicle, isn't it?
It's a huge vehicle. It's very big, and it's,
They kind of, I went to a launch event for this vehicle quite some time ago now, but they kind of see it as a rival to sort of the cheaper kind of Korean family SUVs, like a Holden Captiva, for example, which, you know, probably similar price.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would it be as good a quality as a Captiva, though? Not that a Captiva is a byword for quality.
Given the way this thing had held together, like I say, 12,000 Ks, and it was.
I thought it was okay to drive.
Yeah.
The ride was a little bit untidy, but in terms of open road sort of driving dynamics, I thought it was a pretty good thing, actually.
I mean, it's a good, great engine in it. It's a nice, strong engine.
Diesel.
And it's got some really sort of clever little touches.
Such as?
Such as. You pop the bonnet, it automatically turns the hazard lights on.
That's a good idea.
Which is a good idea, except if you're a Mahindra mechanic, in which case it would probably just be annoying.
Mahindra mechanics probably know how to disconnect.
I'd say so. They'd pull the fuse or something. Things like there was a clever little app that mirrored, in sort of the exact opposite idea of Apple CarPlay, it mirrored what was happening on the screen on your phone, so you could control...
That's handy.
Which is almost entirely useless, I will admit.
Isn't that sort of for people maybe in the back or in the passenger seat?
Yeah.
But that is a stupid idea.
I got all excited about, oh, this is brilliant, and then thought, I could turn the volume up from the stereo outside the car, but that's...
Yeah, because you really need to do that.
And, of course, the other downside is the car does need to be on and connected to the phone, so it's not like you can check stuff when you're inside and the car's locked up and turned off. So, yeah.
Okay. That's one of those.
Maybe that's not such a clever
idea. One of those
idea.
Because we can features.
I think so, yeah. But it was quite neat. You had your profile on there and everything too.
Yeah.
Which is pointless. I don't know why I brought it up, really.
But it is a relatively practical thing. It's got, as I recall, it's got like a flat floor in the back and stuff.
Completely flat floor.
It's in the back.
A full 7-seater.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact details of the literage of the cargo space, but it's lots.
It is big.
It's very big in the back. So, but no, I was pleasantly surprised and enjoyed my time with the
XUV
500.
Do you like the way it looks? Or do you think it looks weird?
Largely like the way it looks. I think the door handles are decidedly weird.
I can't remember what the door handles look like.
Oh, they're sort of weird, sort of bulgy things that stick out from the side.
Oh, okay. Well, that sort of fits because...
everything else is bulgy and weird.
The whole sort of design ethos is bulgy bits. Like the wheel arches are all bulgy. They sort of stick up the top.
Yep. I mean, overall, I did quite like the way that looked.
Yeah.
People didn't point and laugh, so that's always a good thing.
Are you sure?
Not that I could see. But no, generally speaking, for my sort of one of those rare occasions where you get to drive a not brand new car, I was very impressed with how it held together and just how it drove in general.
It'd still be a relatively brave purchase, I suppose.
I suppose so.
You'd be worried about depreciation. Not on a second-hand one, obviously.
No,
if you're buying a second-hand one, it'd probably come at a very attractive price. But
I'm sure.
As a new vehicle, you know, it's a... it's sort of an unknown.
I imagine people that buy them would be like the people that buy the Great Wall Utes and things like that.
They're
buying them basically with the idea of just running them into the ground.
You know, the local Mahindra people have said, you know, their buyer base is almost exclusively rural.
Yep.
There's a lot of farmers because Mahindra sells a lot of vehicles here, which are not road registrable.
No.
But quite popular with farmers because they're quite tough.
Yep.
And they just go anywhere. And I guess, you know, it's... they're familiar with the brand.
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting vehicle.
It is an interesting vehicle.
I quite like the way it looks.
Yeah. Yeah,
It's a bit strange.
Yeah, yeah. I like a bit of weirdness.
Hmm.
That's getting rarer these days. But anyway, and on that note, seeing as we don't have Cameron here to sort of drag things out and waffle on.
No, that's true, yeah. It's been pleasingly crisp.
Well,
any of his nonsense?
Yeah, we should just get rid of him. I think it's much better.
I think so, yeah.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah. Right into Cameron Officer.
Cameron Officer at. Yeah. I nearly said his actual email address there. All right, well, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for joining this episode of the New Zealand Motoring Podcast, brought to you by podcasts.nz.